anyone have a topic that they want me to address? Do you really?
You wouldn't want me to tell you why.
Names? Nope. Concepts. Anyone else? I'll build it in. Anyone else? What? Nope. That's such a Sparty request.
Tikkunin?
Shamos.
I was going to speak about Shogun, but I heard that Rav Zucker spoke about it yesterday, and I cannot. I don't know if I'm at Mr. Brewer. I have a string in Mr. Brewer. Josh Pavel, anything on the agenda? I'd love to pass it over. I know, but I don't have anything. That's a problem. What? Yeah? What? Avodas Hashem. What a narrow topic. I'll tell you what. I'll touch on names. I'll touch on Avodas Hashem. And if I have the guts and the tapes go off, I will touch on why you landed. But at that point, the tapes have to go off.
Off the record.
Goodbye. Okay. We'll start with it. Isaac, you're making me nervous. What? You don't want to fall asleep. Very honest. Stand right over here. Isaac, a few questions. Do you usually fall asleep in the sukkah?
That's the witness.
Why?
There's two us during the day.
So you ever generally fall asleep during? But just mine. Okay. I hear you don't sleep at night. No?
I sleep.
You sleep? All right. Isaac, we'll make sure you don't fall asleep. Even if you I can hit you if necessary?
All right.
Rimler. Okay. I'm going to start with a couple of just short Divrei Torah that I have, and then we'll try and transition into some of the issues at hand. First of all, anytime, Bernstein. Right over here. Anytime we have an introduction into a character in Chumash, looking at how we're introduced into that personality is going to be very, very important in terms of identifying what he is all about. And if there's any person in Chumash that we will go ahead and identify, get an insight into, that to get to tap into Moshe Rabbeinu's introduction to us is going to be very, very profound and very, very significant. The origins of Moshe Rabbeinu we find in the beginning of this week's parsha, and we are told. And I'm going to ask for some audience participation. Isaac, stay with me. Torah says, Perek Beis, Vayelech ish mi beis Levi, Vayikach es bas Levi, Vatar ha'isha v'atelet bein, Vatera also kitovu batitzpenei shlosha yirachim. What is a man from Beis Levi takes a woman from Beis Levi, they have a baby, They watch over him, he's kitov, and they watch him for 3 months. What is most striking about these two psukim? Isaac?
Why 3 months?
Why 3 months? That's not so striking. Isaac!
What's,
It means a man from base lady took a woman from base lady.
Why is it significant?
It's vague. What's vague?
Doesn't specify who's who.
The anonymity of the pasuk is striking. Who's the father? Don't know. Who's the mother? Don't know. What's the name of the child? Don't know. And then we're told they can't hide him for how long? They can't hide him for much longer. Vatikacho, they take a teva. Tevas gome v'tachmora b'achleim v'azefes, they take v'tosim ba'es ha yelet. What's his name?
Doesn't say
his name. V'tosim basuf, they put him in the water. And you know who's looking on while this is going on? V'tetatzav achoto. What's her name? No name. Now, I know we know who these people are, but the anonymity of the pasuk, pshuto shel mikra, is very, very striking. And then we're told that Teirad bas paro v'lirchot al ha'yor, she reaches out, she brings the child in, v'hine nar bocher, v'tachmo olav, she has mercy, v'tomer, and she says, miyaldei ha'ivrim zeh. This child came from the Ivrim. Who's looking on at the scene? Vatome achoto, the sister. Anonymous. El basparo. Shall I call vakarasi lach e isha menekes? Mina ivriot, should I get a menekes for this child? Basparo says yes. Finally, they bring the menika. Nurses her vayidal hayelet. The child grows up. Once again, anonymity. And finally, we're told, Basparo takes him as a son, Vatikra Shmo Moshe, Vatomer Ki Min HaMayim Nishitu. He's called Moshe. Who names him?
Basparo.
Isaac, are you with me still?
Yeah.
Why the anonymity of the Psukim? Why does the Torah do that? Why is it that we shroud in mystery the mother, father, sister, and even the identity of the child? Do you have a mahalach?
Maybe we shouldn't just use the story in regard to them, but we should somehow apply it to ourselves.
Oh, Isaac quotes, I remember when I was a youngster, there was a short story I read called Everyman. And it was about this anonymous person who was, you want to kind of, this is about like Everyman. Okay, anyone else? Rabosai, who was Moshe's mother? I would suggest to you that Moshe had two mothers. He had a biological mother whose name... Steiners, please. Some decorum is bad enough, I have to deal with Talmidim. There is Yocheved, the Bas Levi, is his biological mother. She is the one who bears him, she is the one who nurses him. Who is his adoptive mother? That's Basparo. And perhaps the anonymity of the psukim are there to tell us that Moshe really grows up with a dual identity. Biological mother is Yocheved, but at the same time, Moshe is named by Basparo. And naming a child... And if you want to really get poetic here, when a baby is born, he's drawn out of the fluid that is the amniotic fluid of the mother's womb, and here Basparo draws him out of this river, and again, he is reborn as a mitzvah child. He has a dual identity. His name Moshe is an Egyptian name. He grows up in the house of Paro. Why is that important that Moshe has this dual identity? Because the next psukim, which is the initiation of Moshe, how we're introduced to Moshe, we're told that right away, he grows up in the house of Paro. He grows up. And he goes out to his brothers. Vayetze el achiv. Who's that mean? What does that mean? Vayetze el achiv. What does that mean? He goes out to his brothers. Who are his brothers?
Mitzrim.
Or?
Both.
Can't tell. He's a prince in the house of... He's a prince of Egypt. Yeah? Does that work? Prince of Egypt. On the other hand, he's a Yehudi. Vayar ish mitzri makeh ish ivri me'achav. And finally, he sees a mitzri beating a Yehudi and he steps up, looks ko vacho, vayar ki ein ish vayach es ha-mitzri. What are you doing? In or out?
I'm in.
Get in. Vayach es ha-mitzri. And he what? He kills the mitzri. Parenthetical Musser Vort. What does it mean he looked here and there and he saw Bayar Kienish? So what does Rashi say? He looked ahead into the future of this, at least the potential future of this mitzri, and saw that
there's no one
there. That no tzaddik would come of him, no great person would come of him, and therefore he felt he had license to go ahead and kill him. What's the message over here? Musar Vort coming up is that when you go ahead, every single thing that you do has ripple effects, has consequences. And Moshe Rabbeinu understood that if he killed this person, but this person had a potential to change, to be something, to become something, to have offspring that could have been tzaddikim, that even though this mitzvah deserved to be killed right now, but Moshe had to take into account the ripple effect. Every single consequence, every single action that we do has a ripple effect. One of my talmidim many, many years ago referred this to this as the what? The angle theory. I said this over once? Yes. Twice. The angle theory, what we do now impacts the next step and the next step and the next step, and a person, Ezehu Chacham, Haroa Es Hanolad, can anticipate the future, can look, the Nolad, the moon is hidden, but he knows that even though right now it's hidden, it's going to become revealed. A Chacham who can look beyond the here and now, look ahead. That's the definition of a chacham. See what is not necessarily in front of his face, but is the future consequence, and therefore Moshe does that. Finally, day one, he kills the mitzri. Vayetze bayom hasheni. Second day, he goes out, and what does he see? He sees two Jews fighting. Two Jews. Yesterday was a mitzri and a Jew. Today it's two Jews. Lama sake, la rasha, lama sake reyecha. Why are you going ahead and beating your fellow Jew? Moshe responds, as an aside, again, Moshe in his early years has this dual identity. He is Mitzri on the one hand, he is Yehudi on the other. I remember vividly when I was 4 years old, the first Torah that I was taught by Mora Sara, in the Mariah School of Ethics. And she told me a medrash, the first medrash I ever learned. You all know the medrash. Moshe Rabbeinu is presented by Paro with coals on the one hand and diamonds, gold on the other. Because Paro is suspicious. And Moshe reaches for the gold, and then he's pushed by the Malach towards the coals. Perhaps one could suggest what is the deeper idea of this Medrash. What does the Medrash really convey? This is the dual identity. Moshe is on the one hand a prince, gold, and that's That's where he's raised. On the other hand, he identifies with the Yehudim, with Achiv, the slaves, the coals which represent the slavery. And this is the dichotomy that the Torah wants to emphasize with the anonymity of his upbringing, of his early birth. And then as Moshe grows up, he starts to forge who he is. And we're told, day one, Mitzvah Yehudi, he smites the Mitzvah. Day two, Yehudi, Yehudi, Rasha, Lama, Take, Re'echa. Now Moshe has to run away. And where does he run to? He runs to Midian, and he's confronted again with oppressors oppressing the Benos Yisra, fighting over water, over the well. And what does Moshe do once again? Moshe casts away, gets rid of the aggressive Rohim, enabling Benos Yisro to take from the water. What is the constant theme that permeates every aspect of Moshe's origins?
Standing up for the oppressed.
Standing up for the oppressed. We're introduced to Moshe not as Moshe Rabbeinu, as the Nosen HaTorah. That's not what the Torah emphasizes. You know what enables Moshe to be that Moshe Rabbeinu? What enables it is the fact that he's always looking out for those that are in need, those that are oppressed. And it doesn't make a difference whether it's a Goy versus a Jew, or whether it's Jew versus Jew, or Goy versus Goy. Moshe's constant thrust is to go ahead and be a Moshiach, be someone who is saving those in need. And that is exactly what we're told this is. And when we're, this is, and perhaps the name that he's given, identifying he's a Mitzri, but also raised by Yehudi. That's the dichotomy. And at some point, he identifies what team he is on. And on some level, as I reflect on this idea, and I think about Talmidim, and I think about a Musa that I can share with you, it's something you hear from me a lot, and therefore I'm not going to go ahead and develop it much. But we live a life of dual identity. It's a constant that we live. And again, those of us who contemplate our education, the dual identity of our education, the dual identity of our upbringing, how we are constantly omer al shnei ha'se'ifim. On the one hand, we're very secular. On the other hand, we're also very Jewish. And we live this tightrope. The movies that we watch, the TV shows that we're entertained by, the music, perhaps, that we listen to, is the modern day Mitzrayim, is very, very secular. At the same time, we certainly sit, learn Torah, pledge allegiance to the Ribono Shel Olam, mitzvot, tefillah, but we're very, I would suggest, our dor, this generation, is a very confused generation about its core identity. Our knowledge, frankly, of Torah pales in comparison to our knowledge of the world around us. In fact, there was a Rebbe in MTA. Every year, 12th grade Rebbe who gives his students a test. Every year. Two tests, 10 questions. One is on pop culture. And the other one is on Jewish culture and ideas. Basic questions that people should know. He'll ask questions about pop culture. What team did Wayne Gretzky play for? Name me three songs that Plonis sings. And when it comes to the pop culture questions, his Talmidim invariably get 8 out of 10. 9 out of 10. They do very nicely. And then when it comes to the questions, what century did Rabbi Akiva Eger live in? The Grah. What is the Haskafa that Rav Kook stands for? Various questions about basic Jewish knowledge. His Talmidim, unfortunately, score much lower. 2 out of 10, 3 out of 10, different scale. we live as this dual identity, and as Moshe Rabbeinu, at some point, we have to go ahead and forge and say who we are. Moshe Rabbeinu casts his lot, obviously with Klal Yisrael, and he defines himself as the Ish HaMoshiach, the Baal Chesed. And it's because of the Baal Chesed, looking out for others, wanting to help others, giving to others, saving others, that's what enables him to be the Mekabel HaTorah. Because when you're focused on others, how I can help, what I can do, I'm there for you. Not focused on me, not focused on myself, but on others, you become a kli. You become a vessel to absorb, a vessel to receive. And this is the anava of Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe anav nikol adam, and that's exactly the midah of the sneh, where Moshe has his first revelation, a low bush, Sinai, the low mountain, Midbar, this very desolate place, because it's the sense of anava, shtelus. It's not about me. What can I do for you? How can I help you? That is what enables Moshe to be the manik. So ironic. But Moshe has the closest relation with Hashem of any other person, because he has the midah of being a mekabel. He's looking for others, not for himself. He's a recipient. And now he can go ahead and be the kli through which Hashem gives him the Torah. The Ibn Ezra points out that Moshe was raised in the house of Paro. So ironic. You still with me? Dobie Halder. How are we doing, Sadek?
Set up straight.
Excellent. Abby Bernstein. Moshe's raised in the house of Paro. So ironic. What did Paro want to do? Kill all males, because he knew that a male was going to be the Moshiach. What an irony. And where is he raised? He's raised in the base power. The Ibn Ezra makes an amazing comment. What gave Moshe the strength? Such an irony. It's so tough. What gave Moshe the strength to stand up to that Mitzri and kill him? To stand up to the aggressive Jew and say, Rasha lama sakha reyach. So the Ibn Ezra says, such a balance, such a tough balance. Moshe was the honor par excellence. But you know what he had? He had confidence. Because he grew up as a prince. And when you grow up as a prince, and you think of yourself as someone who can do, who has capability, who has capacity, who does not just recede into the limelight. You can be an unav, but you can be a leader. And that's exactly who Moshe is. He's a leader who's ready to step up because he grew up as a prince. And on some level, we as ourselves have to look at ourselves. How do we look at ourselves? Do we understand what we are? The capacity that we have? That we too are princes. We have unbelievable abilities, unbelievable powers to help other people, to mechazek other people, to do chasadim. Not to focus on ourselves, but to have the confidence to step up when things are wrong, to choose right, to go in the right direction, not to be influenced in negative ways. To have that capacity, to have that power. This is who Moshe is. So Vort, I like to tell over. I said it over to my morning shir this morning. Names, Avodas Hashem. Avodas Hashem. Listen to this. He said really well. It's a stunning, stunning mitziv. Everyone knows the mitziv. Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, who says in his Hagdama to Sefer Shmos that every single one of the Svarim that we have, the Rishonim gave a special name. Not the standard name, but a special name. Bereishis, says Ramban, is referred to as the Sefer HaYetzirah. The Ramban refers to Shmos as Sefer HaGeula. The Netziv cites the Baal Halachos Gedolos. You with me?
Yes.
Baal Halachos Gedolos says Shmos is called the Chumash HaShem. What a creative name. The second book. Sefer HaGeula, that's a name. That's a name. Sefer HaYetzirah, that's a name. Chumash HaSheni, what does that mean? So then Sid explains, we'll say it over briefly, that you know what Chumash HaSheni is? It's not a separate Sefer. Sefer Shmos is a continuation of Bereishis. Whereas Bereishis is focused on physical creation of the world, the first letter of Shmos is Ver Eilish Shmos, is a hemshech of creation. But what are we creating in Shmos? The Chumash HaSheni? Not physical, but rather the spiritual creation. Klal Yisrael as a nation, as an Am Segula, one nation under God. Kabbalah Satorah, and then the climax of Sefer Shmos is, of course, the Binyan HaMishkan B'Hashuas HaShchina. Where? In this world. When Moshe is born, what does the family of Moshe see in a house? Vatera? Ki Tov. Says Rashi, what is Ki Tov? It lit up. The beginning of Sefer Shmos tells us about the light that Moshe Rabbeinu brings into the world, just like the world was created, first creation in Bereishis. Is Ki Tov is light? Moshe, who's going to bring Ruchnius into the world, Torah Shnikra Reishis, is Ki Tov, brings light into the world. Second parasha in Chumash, Noach. Where does he find himself? Oh, in a teva. Only other time in Chumash that the word teva is found is beginning of Shmos, a teva, a mirror image, echoing Sefer Bereishis, because Sefer Shmos is spirituality. This world is nothing without the infusion of Kedusha. And Kedusha is what Sefer Shmos, it's not just a story of Eser Makos, of redemption. It's a story of the infusion of Ruchnis into this world. Siegel? Ruchnis. Now, who brings the Ruchnis? Who brings it? Where does it come from? And the answer is, it's a synergistic relationship. Hashem gives the Torah. But when He gives the Torah, then we, by learning Torah, by davening, by doing mitzvot, infuse this world with its ruchnis. Who builds the Mishkan? We build the Mishkan. We build the Mishkan, and then Hashem dwells in this world. We do the avodas Hashem, and then we have the Ashras Hashchina. Sefer Shmos closes with Mishkan, which is the climax of creation. Sefer Bereishis, Hashem created the world, rested on Shabbos, Sefer Shmos, we create a world. The Asu LiMikdash, the Shachanti B'Socham, a place for Hashem in our world, and it comes perfect circle. That's the reciprocity. So something always bothered me. Always bothered me. When Moshe's by the snare, what's he told to do? Take off your shoes. Take off your shoes. Why? You're in a holy place. So take off your shoes. I'll be honest with you. Human feet, especially without socks, are disgusting. It's disgusting. No? No? Stubby, funny-looking appendages that emerge from this block of stuff. It's not an attractive part of the human organism. Like feet and elbows.
It is.
Why is it that when you get to a makom kadosh, you know, kohanim, every morning, kohanim come along. They remove their shoes, prancing around, barefoot. I mean, If a boy walked into yeshiva barefoot, sandals without socks, terrible. It's disgusting. It's not a nice looking, it always bothered me. What's the pshat? What's the pshat? Why are they taking off his shoes? They wear nice shoes, put on, keep your shoes on. What's the pshat? You get a problem? You got something? Yeah! Bricks! John Bricks, Chassidus HaTorah. He didn't remove his shoes. He removed physicality. And shoes represent very nice, beautiful. And what about the Kohanim?
Same
concept. All right. Very nice, beautiful, beautiful. Squire. Yeah.
I never heard this anywhere, but maybe like. In the desert, especially if you're wearing shoes, it's the only way you can get like around because like of like the caguses and like the rocks and stuff like that. Yeah. And he's saying like, take off your shoes. Like right now, you're not going anywhere. Like this is my time with you here, and like make sure you stay put.
It sounds like the Torah is saying, take off your shoes because this is a holy place. I am here. Take off your shoes because this is a holy, not because of desert rocks. Yeah.
It represents humbleness.
Humbleness.
Taking your shoes
implies
that you're lower than the person you're speaking to.
All right. Yeah, Lior, last comment.
Something respect.
Respect. As I say, the feet are not so geschmack.
But it's cool. Obviously, the Torah is telling us to do something that it's
showing. Lior, Skype, obviously, but I need a pshat. That's not a pshat. Okay. I did. Okay. Rabbo say, let me try this pshat on. I saw this pshat less than 2 hours ago. It used to be when we davened Birchas HaShachar. Today we make the brachos when we're in shul. Back in the day, when would we make Birchas HaShachar? When you get up, you'll say, Zokef Kfufin. When you open your eyes, Pokeh Chivin. When you go in and get dressed, Malbish Arumin. What bracha would you make when you put on your shoes? What? Sha'asa li kol sark. You make the bracha that Hashem, you made for me everything when you put on your shoes. What's pshat in that? Why sha'asali called sarki when I put on my shoes? Why not when I put on my hat, my shirt? Why is that sha'asali called sarki? So the Shalah HaKadosh says the following idea. The medieval philosophers used to characterize the world into four different categories. There's something called domain. Inanimate objects, rocks, soil, and the like. Then you have something that is alive but does not have capacity for locomotion. Someach, plants which get their sustenance from soil, that's the next level. Then you have, after someach you have animals which are sustained by plants, that's the next level, and above that of course you have man. Rabosai, Sha'asa li kol tzarki. Hashem gave to man everything in the world, everything below him, animals, plants, and the inanimate objects are all here for us, for our use. And when we put on our shoes, step into our shoes, we are reflecting that the notch below us, animals, are 100% under our dominion and control. Because after all, where do shoes come from? Shoes are made out of leather. Leather is the hide of animals. Hashem gave us everything. But be aware. Be aware and be sensitive. That there's certain times where you have to be cognizant that you are standing in front of the Ribono Shel Olam. And at that point, be aware, be sensitive, and understand that while I gave you everything, Shasali called Sarchi, but there's certain times where you need to be humbled, where you need to know that there's something above you as well. So when Moshe is in a Makom Kadosh standing before Shechina, what does he have to do? Take off those shoes. You should not now be expressing your control, because at the end of the day, realize that whose control are you really under? Hashem's control. And when you're in the Beis HaMikdash, you're allowed to wear shoes in Beis HaMikdash? No, why not? Because again, when you're in Shechina, in the presence of Shechina, you're not in control. Be aware that there's something above you. And when the Kohanim are giving Birchas Kohanim, what do we have on their fingers? Their fingers are concealed. We don't look at their fingers because that is a place of Hashuas HaShechina. And when you realize, you cognize Shechina, you have to express, I'm not in control. You can't go ahead and wear shoes because you're not in control. Such a balance. Such a balance. On the one hand, Moshe Rabbeinu is the manhik of Klal Yisrael. On the other hand, he's anav mikol avav. Human beings, everything is given to us. It's all about it's here for us. We are all powerful. We have tremendous kochos, and it's all for us. On the other hand, to be humble. On the other hand, to know that we're here to help others, to serve others, to know our place. If you really want Shechina, we have to make room for the Ribono Shel Olam. To really be an Eved Hashem, you have to be mashpil yourself. Know your potential. Know your qualities. Know everything you can accomplish. But at the same time, to be humble, to be an anav, to be looking at how I can help others, what I can do for others, how I can use those talents for others. That's the legacy of Moshe. It's an unbelievable legacy. That's the lesson. You can grow up in a house of Paro, but be there for the slaves. And that's what made Moshe the Nosin HaTorah. You can go ahead and wear shoes, but understand that you live tachas kanfei Hashchina. That delicate balance. Always going ahead and looking for others, helping others, being an anav. That's how a person can go ahead and transmit Torah, become a ben Torah. Don't think I have to be this weak, passive person. You could be a leader, but know where your abilities come from. Know the lessons of the shoes. Know the lessons of Shechina. And when you do so, you can achieve the most amazing things. It's no student. Rabosai, I am going to take leave of you after Shabbos for a short little week. I'm very much looking forward to a very nice Shabbos together with you and with Safra Shlita and with Goldwicht Shlita. And again, we're gonna miss you a lot next week. You should steig away. You should enjoy the teal. Oh, it's no time to talk about Landers and Yeshiva University. I'm up against the clock. I'll take 5 minutes. I'll touch on 5 minutes. 5 minutes. 5 minutes.